Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Tet Amud Bet by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing or following up to the discussion we had about the fact that certain items that the Kohen is holding don't necessarily belong to him, but he has to discharge his obligation by giving them to the entire Mishmar, and then they share in all of that with him. He does not get to keep it that for himself. On the other hand, here the Gemara speaks about what a Kohen is entitled to keep for himself on a personal basis, and that is Tanur Banan. How do we know that a Kohen has a right to bring up his korbanot, meaning his personal korbanot, or a korbanot that were given to him by a particular individual to bring up and to be makriv in the mikdash? How do we know that they're entitled to do this? And that's not part of the deal that was struck between the mishmarot, that they basically divided up the year into 24 cycles, and each time, or each week, a new Mishmar would come up and work that cycle, and they would be the beneficiaries of all the korbanot that were brought during that period of time. How do we know that that's true only with regards to the korbanot atzibur, or the korbanot that are driven by that day, versus korbanot that are personal korbanot? And so there, the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Parshat Shoftim, in Perek Yud Chet and Dvarim, V'chi yavo levi me'achad she'arecha mekol Yisrael asher hu gar sham, uva b'chalavat nosho l'makom asher yivchar Hashem. So here Levi is used not just to refer to particularly Shevet Levi, but the Kohanim of Shevet Levi. And it says that he can come up to work in the Mikdash b'chalavat nosho whenever he feels like it. V'sheret b'shem Hashem lokav, and he will service in the Mikdash for Hashem. K'chol echav levim omdim sham lifnei Hashem, along with all the other Kohanim that are already present working before Hashem. And then chelek echelek yochelu levad mimkarav ala avot. That is true with regards to these personal korbanot, but levad mimkarav ala avot, aside from that which they already pre-divided based on the agreement between the different mishmarot of the Kohanim, that they divide them up on a weekly basis, they cycle through, and each mishmar works, again, on a 24-week cycle, 1 week for each mishmar. Now, that teaches us with regards to the bringing of the korban, or the right to bring the korban, that the Kohen has the right to be the one who is makrivit, the one to do the avoda of this korban. Minayin sh'avodata ve'ora shelo. How do we know? The way Rashi translates avodata is char avodata, meaning the reward of doing the avoda, which is the basar. The one who does the avoda of the korban is entitled to eat the basar, the flesh of the korban. So Rashi sees avodata b'sara, and Ora are the skins of the Kodesh Kodashim. They belong to the Kohanim. How do we know that this individual who brings up the Korban, his own Korban, or the Kohen who works, again, in a time period that is not designated for his Mishmar, how do we know once he's done the Avodah, he's also entitled to keep the Basar and the Or? Talmud Lomar, and here they quote a pasuk from Parshat Naso, which says, Ish et Kodoshav lo yiyu, Ish asher yiten lakohen lo yiyeh. So the person who brings the korbanot has the right of determination as to what happens with those korbanot. In other words, what the Gemara terms as tovat hana'ah, the right to give away your truma to whichever kohen you wish. And so to over here, with regards to a korban or with regards to what belongs to you, you have the right to decide what happens to it. And over here, since the kohen is bringing up the korban and it's his korban, he has the right to decide what to do with the basar and the orot. They belong to him, and it's his decision what to do with them, meaning that he can keep them personally and eat them. Others term the avodah over here to refer to avodat matana, which are the gifts that extend from the animal. And the Rashba says that the word avodah throughout Shas is used many times to describe the Kohanim's work, quote-unquote, with regards to eating of Kodashim or the eating of Truma. And therefore, that's what the avodata here is, the eating of the kodashim by the Kohanim. So that would mean, what is his entitlement to the eating of the kodashim, as well as the orot of the kodashim? So now, the Gemara says, HaKeitzat, what is the scenario here? Imaya balmum, if he is a Kohen with a blemish, who is not entitled to do the avoda in the Mikdash, not now the Kohen, Shaboto Mishmar. He gives over the Korban to a Kohen in that Mishmar, who can do the avoda. He doesn't have the ability to do the avoda himself. Ve'avodata ve'ora shelo. And then the items that derive from this korban belong to that kohen, meaning the kohen that brings it up, the baal mum who brings it up. And that is because a baal mum doesn't have a right to be makriv on the mizbeach. On the other hand, he does have a right to eat from the basar kodoshim. And so therefore, even though it's brought by one of the members of the Mishmar, he still can make the decision or the basar and the or belong to him because of the fact that he does have the right to eat them and he can hold on to that right. And it's still called v'ish et kodeshov lo yiyu. On the other hand, Rashi brings an alternate girsa over here, which indicates that avodah b'orah l'anshei mishmar, that the avodah and the or belong to anshei mishmar because of the fact that they were makrivit. Once they were the ones who are makrivit, they are the ones who lo yiyu, that it belongs to them. Meaning that he has the right to give it to the Mishmar, but he doesn't have the right to keep the Ur and the Basar because of the fact that he's just like now any other Israel who doesn't have the ability to do Avodah in the Mikdash. And therefore, the gifts that come from that belong to the Kohanim of the Mishmar, not to him. So Rashi brings both variations of the Girsa as to whom the Basar and Ur belong to in the case where it's a Baal Mum who's giving over his Korban to the Mishmar to be Makriv on the Mizbeach. If, on the other hand, the Kohen was elderly or sick, then he can give it to any Kohen that he chooses. But on the other hand, with regards to the Basar and the Or, they will go to Anshei Mishmar. So, what exactly is the scenario here with regards to this Zaken and Chole? If he has the ability to do Avoda, then the avoda and the or, the basar and the or, should also be his, because since he could have done the avoda, even though he didn't choose to do the avoda, he still holds on to those rights, because he's just sending someone as a proxy for him to be makriv, and that means he should be holding on to the rights of the basar and the or. Why is that given to the anshei mishmar? Ve'idolo matzi avoda, and if he can't do the avoda, then shliach heche mishave. How is he able to make a shliach in this case? The only way that he's allowed to make a shliach is if he himself could have been makriv the korban, then he can appoint someone to be a proxy but makriv on his behalf. But if he himself can't do it, then he can't appoint someone else to do it on his behalf. Now that is a little bit difficult because we do find that Yisrael even can appoint a kohen to be makriv a korban on his behalf, and you can't appoint shlichim to do it on your behalf. In addition to the fact that we know the Kohanim don't function as Shluchei Didan, that we saw in the Gemara in Kedushin, they function as Shluchei Degevoah. They're the Shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then, why should it matter in terms of giving over to the Kohen? He's not really functioning as the proxy of the individual who gives it. He's really a proxy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what you have to say over here is that this is a particular matana or right that is granted to the Kohen for his ability to override what would otherwise be the case by Mishmar. Anybody else who brings up a Korban and gives it to the Mishmar, they're subject to the rules of the Mishmar, which is that the Mishmar is Makrivit, and they also get to keep whatever Korban was brought. On the other hand, here, the Kohen has a right to circumvent the normal processes of the Mishmar and bring his own Korban. And that's a personal right that he retains. The question is, can he pass that right to someone else? Well, as long as he can still function and work on his own as a Kohen, then he can pass that right to another Kohen. On the other hand, if he doesn't have that personal right because he's no longer capable of doing the Avodah, then he can't pass that right to anyone else. And that's why there's a failure here. If he's unable to do Avodah, he can't appoint another Kohen to act on his behalf. So Amar Papa, Shechola Sota Yidei Dachak. That is a case where he can do it under duress. Meaning that he wouldn't be able to do it in normal circumstances, but if he really pushed himself, he could do it. Avoda dechiyavi le'ayidei dechak, avoda hi umishavi shliach. Avoda, if you really press yourself and it's under duress and you try your hardest to do the avoda and you're successful, then we say that that's a good avoda. We don't need young, sprightly, healthy individuals to do it. Even if someone is sick or elderly, there is no cutoff date in terms of when a Kohen has to retire. And therefore, he could still do the avoda and the mikdash, even though he's a little slower, even though it's very hard for him, but he could do it at his own pace. Since it's possible for him to do it, that's enough for him to grant that right to another Kohen to act on his behalf. On the other hand, achila, when it comes to the eating of the korban, when you eat under duress, that's no longer called regular eating. It's called eating that is, the terminology gasa here, is used in other places in the Shas to mean achila gasa, means overeating or gorging on food. Over here it means the same thing, but just this person is unable to eat a lot. So even eating a small amount for him is the equivalent of the feeling or the sensation of someone who's ate, a tremendous amount of gorged on food and is disgusted already by food and can't eat anymore. That achila, achila gasa, lav klumo. And that type of eating is lo shmei achila. It's not considered to be any achila. Shumachi avodata bora dan shei mishmar. And for that reason, since he doesn't have the capability to eat the basar or to participate in the spoils, the gifts of the korban, he no longer has that personal right to take them, and therefore they default to the mishmar, and the mishmar gets to keep them. Or if you have the alternate girsa and Rashi before with regards to the balmum, then that would follow through, which is that even though he's able to appoint a shaliach to be the kohen, he's to be makrid the korban, it's still the gifts, the basar and the or belong to the mishmar as a whole, and this would be consistent with that idea. Now, as far as achila gasa is concerned, Tosafot points out that in different places in Shas, the Gemara views achila gasa differently. Sometimes it says achila gasa shmei achila. Sometimes it says achila gasa lo shmei achila. Therefore, Tosafot goes on to explain that either there might be two definitions of the word achila gasa, one of which is to, as we said before, gorge on food or eat more than your capacity to the point where you're disgusted with the food. Over there, lo shmei achila. On the other hand, there might be an achila where you don't eat the shame, the mitzvah. You're just eating for the enjoyment of the food, but you're not eating for the particular mitzvah that you need to eat for. And so therefore, in those cases, you might still be shmei achila. It still might be called achila in that case. Even though you're not eating for the particular mitzvah, you're eating in order to be satisfied. That's called achila. But then when you're talking about achila gasa, where the intake of the food is so mishukatz, so disgusting to you that you would regurgitate it or you'd want not to eat at all, that achila gasa is lo shmei achila. That's the one way that Tosafot deals with it. Tosafot here hints to the other way that he deals with it, which is the Tosafot in Psachim actually distinguishes between two types of achila gasa, even within the physical consumption of food, which is sometimes you can eat and you're full, but if you ate a little more, you could deal with it, even though it's not particularly appetizing to you, it's not so great. That's shmei achila. There's an achila gasa that's even beyond that point, which is that you're so full that to put another ounce of food in your mouth would make you so uncomfortable and disgusted that you would actually disgorge it. And that would be achila gasa shelo shmei achila. So there he says that maybe the definition is still the same in the Gemara Psachim. It depends how far along you are in that sensation of being full. And so in the earlier stages, it's still called achila. In the later stages, it's not called achila. And again, the comparison to the zaken and the chole is these individuals who are not particularly hungry or have an appetite for food, they're at that same point as a person who is completely full and cannot intake any more food. And so that's why their achila is lo shmei achila. Now, Amar Rav Sheshet, im haya kohen tamei b'kurban tzibur, notna l'chol mi shirtzeh v'avodota v'ora l'anshei mishmar. If a kohen was tamei, when it comes to a kurban tzibur, he can give over the right to whomever he wants, and then the basar, or the skins that come from that, belong to the entirety of the mishmar. Now over here, a specific kohen doesn't have any right to being a korban tzibur. By definition, a korban tzibur belongs to the tzibur and to the mishmar as a whole. So what you have to suggest here is that this kohen won the pious, he won the lotteries or the lots that they threw to be makriv the korbanot, and after that point in time, he became tamei. Since he's now tamei, he can't perform the avoda that is incumbent upon him from winning that lot. So then he's allowed to pass that right to any other kohen that he so chooses to do the avoda. As far as the basar and the or, that belongs to the anshei mishmar, like any other case of a kurban tzibur. Now the Gemara asks, hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? E te'ika tehorim, if there are other kohenim or tehorim, tmeim mi matzu abde, then tmeim are precluded from doing the avoda. This is based on a machloket in the first parak in Yoma, as well as in other places, as to whether tuma is hutra b'tzibur or tuma is dechuya b'tzibur. That means that when it comes to tuma in korbanot tzibur, do we allow, once there is someone who's tamei is doing it, do we say that it's already hutra? If the rove of the kohanim are tmeim, then we don't worry about tuma anymore, and it's open season, and anybody can do the korbanot. Or do we say tuma is duchuya b'tzibur, meaning that where it's an absolute necessity and we have no other choice, we allow tuma to be overridden with regards to the korbanot tzibur. But if we have a choice and we have tohorim there, then we will force the tohorim to do it. So in a case of tuma hutra b'tzibur, if the rove of the kohanim are tmeim, then it doesn't matter anymore. We would say let anybody who wants to be makrid the korban. Tamei, tahor, it doesn't matter anymore. If you say tumah duchuya b'tzibor, which is, it's only absolutely necessary, then when you have rov kohanim there, it's meim, we would say that the minority of kohanim should perform the avoda because they are still tehorim. And as Tosafot points out, this is Rav Sheshet l'shitato, because Rav Sheshet believes tumah duchuya b'tzibor. And therefore, in this scenario, if the rov of the kohanim are tmeim, and this one individual is also amongst those of the rov that are tmeim, then why does he retain the right to pass the avoda to whomever he wants? The tahorim, those that are tahor, should take over and be the ones that do the avoda in this case. Why does he have the right to pass it to any kohen that he so chooses? Since in a sense, he's lost the right to be makriv the korban. If you say that tumah hutra b'tzibor, then this tamei kohen could have been makrivit, therefore he can pass it to a fellow kohen. On the other hand, if he is now precluded and the tohorim have to take over, he no longer has the right to be makrivit, so he can't pass that right to anyone else. So, v'i d'leket tohorim, if you want to suggest the scenario here is that they're all tameim the kohenim, and therefore we're in a bind, and somebody tamei has to do it, so therefore since he's won this right, he can give that right to anyone else because he's allowed to be makriv, then avodotav orale anshei mishmar, who exactly is eating the korbanot? Because even though when it comes to the korbanot atzibur, that tumaz hutra or duchuya with regards to the avoda, the doing of the korbanot and putting them on the mizbeach, so far as echilat ha korbanot atzibur, their tuma is not nidchet. We don't override tuma, and those kohenim that are tameim cannot eat from the korbanot. But if you're telling me everyone is tamei, then who's eating the korban now? So yes, now you figured out how he has a right to be makrivin and pass it to someone else. On the other hand, you haven't shown me why there's anybody left to eat them. Ha, tameim ninu. Everybody is tamei. Velo matzei achle, and they can't eat the korbanot atzibur. Samarova, ema the bali mumim tehorim shoto mishmar. They can give it over to the bali mumim, those that are blemished in that mishmar, who are not entitled to do avoda because they're a kohanim with mumim, but they are entitled to get the pieces of the korbanot. So as long as they are tehorim, they can eat from the korbanot. So they will be the ones who eat the korban because they are tehorim. But their being tahor doesn't help us because they're bali mumim and they can't be makriv the korbanot. So as far as being makriv the korban, there's nobody tahor who could be makriv the korban. That's why this kohen retains his right and he can hand it to anyone he wants. On the other hand, with regards to achila, that's going to pass to the mishmar because it's a korban tzibur. And even though there are no kohanim tahorim that could do avoda, there are still kohanim tahorim with bali mumim who could partake in this korban, and they will be the ones who eat the korban b'tahara. Amar Rav Ashi, v'imaya kohen gadol unein, notna l'kol kohen she'irtzeh, v'avodata v'oral anshei mishmar. The kohen gadol has a right, because he is the kohen gadol, to take any avoda that he so chooses in the mikdash. He can do any avoda that he chooses. He can jump in at any point and decide that he'd like to do this avoda. He gets precedence, priority in that manner. With regards to a kohen gadol who is an unein, that's someone who's lost one of the seven relatives that normally people would be mit'abel alehem. On the day of the death, before the burial, the person is known as an onein. We're in this week's parsha, Parshat Ki Tavoh. It tells us that an onein is not allowed to eat from the maser, from kodoshim, and from other places we know that a kohen onein is also not allowed to do avoda in the mikdash. But that's true of a regular kohen hedjot, then an onein can't do avoda in the mikdash. If he does avoda, it's nitchalel. Then it is profaned, and it does not count towards avoda. On the other hand, the kohen gadol, as Rashi brings the psukim over here, it says that he may not be avelut, even for his parents, meaning that he is equivalent or similar to the nazir, who cannot become tamei mate for anyone, and does not give up his post or his position no matter what has happened. And therefore, for a kohen gadol, even if his parents, chas v'shalom, had passed away, and he's an onein, if he does a vote in the mikdash, lo nitchalel, it is not profane because he has no obligation to leave his avoda, or his avoda is fine. He's supposed to stay in his post and doesn't lose his kedusha as the kohen gadol. And since it says, aviv elimo lo itama u'mikdash lo yitze, so therefore, he does have the right to do avoda, whereas a kohen hedjot onein doesn't have the right to do it, and we be mechalel, profane the avoda. So in that case, this kohen gadol onein can retain the right to do the avoda, or whatever he chose to do, and he can pass it to whichever kohen he wants, because that right is still maintained by him. As far as the avoda and the or, meaning the basar and the or, he can't eat it, even though aninut is only that way for what we call aninut yom, which is just the day of death prior to burial, is the person considered to be an onein deoraita, min haTorah, as Rashi brings the pasuk of Achrita Kiyomar, that the final day is like that bitter day, meaning only during the daytime, that one point in time, that one day, the person is an onain. Nevertheless, even though by the evening time he's no longer an onain, and therefore he could partake in the kodeshim, so why shouldn't the Kohen Gadol be able to split, to take a portion of the basar and the or from the avoda like the others in the mishmar? Is because an onain, even though it terminates midoraita during the day, he's still considered to be an onain midrabanan at night until the burial of the individual. So, therefore, since he is an onain, and he will be possibly an onain that night, onain is not allowed to eat or partake in the kodeshim, even an onain Kohen Gadol. So for as far as the avoda is concerned, he can do the avoda himself, or since he can do it himself, he can pass it to any Kohen that he chooses. On the other hand, with regards to the eating of the kodeshim, he cannot be a participant, and therefore it defaults to the Anshei Mishmar, and the Anshei Mishmar will split it up amongst themselves. Again, if it's Korbanot de Tzibur, that would have happened anyway, and the Kohen Gadol would just be a participant and get a larger portion. But if it's a personal Korban, it defaults now to the Anshei Mishmar, because the Kohen Gadol doesn't have the capacity or ability to eat it that night. Mar says, my Kamash Malan, what's the Chiddush of the statement of Ravashi? Tanina, it's an explicit Mishnah. Kohen Gadol makriv onein, veino ochel. That a Kohen Gadol has the entitlement to be makriv or do the avod as an onein, because he does not lose his kedusha or his post just because he's an onein, but he may not eat from the kodeshim. Veino cholek lechol erev, and he can't divide up to eat that nighttime again because of the problem of aninut that might persist into the nighttime. Sakadat chamina, you would have thought ki chas rachman alei de Kohen Gadol lekruveyu. You would have thought that when the Torah has rachamim on the Kohen Gadol, or leaves him in his post, that's only with regards to doing avoda. Alright, if he wants to do avoda, fine, he's left in that post or that position. But to appoint someone else to replace him, maybe he doesn't have that right. And therefore, Rav Ashi comes along to tell you, not only can he do the avoda, but he can also pass that right to someone else. And that's the Kamash Malan of Rav Ashi. Tosafot over here says, he's not sure why the Gemara didn't ask the same thing on Rav Sheshet before. Because Rav Sheshet's din, with regards to Tuma Dechuya B'Tzibur, with regards to a Kohen Tomei B'Kurban Tzibur, that he's allowed to pass it to whomever he wants, and then the Abu Ratab Oran and Shem Mishmar, you could have said the same thing. Tanino, it's a Mishnah. Why don't they ask that on Rav Sheshet, that Tomei is Mutar B'Kurban Tzibur, and he's not permitted to eat it? So you would have the conclusion. What you probably have to say is that the Chiddush is what Rova says, is that you have to come up with a scenario in which everyone is Tamei, and that the Bali Mumim are the ones eating the Basar, and so that wasn't as obvious an outcome that you would have thought of, and that's why even Rav Sheshet's din is a Chiddush, despite the fact that it's also an explicit Mishnah that Tuma overrides by Korbanot HaTzibur. Right now, we continue with the Mishnah. HaGozelet HaGer V'Nishbalo. Person who stole from a Ger, and falsely takes a shvua, denying the fact that he has the gezel, umet, and then he passes away, meaning the ger passes away, harei ze mishlem kerem v'chomesh lekohanim. That's the parshia of gezel ager that's found in Parshat Naso, where he has to pay the kerem, the principal amount, and the chomesh, the additional fifth, which is 25% of the principal amount, to the kohanim. V'asham, the mizbeach, and then he has to bring a kurban asham, shenamar, because it says in the pasuk in Parshat Naso, Bimein le ish goel lashiv hasham elav hasham amushav lashem na kohen milvad ela kipurim asher yechaper bo alav. And as we saw already in yesterday's daf, if a person does not have a redeemer, the only person who doesn't have a redeemer amongst Klal Yisrael is a ger. And it says here, if the ger who is then not available because he's passed away and he has no yorshim and no relatives, then the keren and the chomesh go to the kohen, and the asham goes on the mizbeach. He was taking the monies and the asham up to Yerushalayim, umet, and this is the gazlan himself, the thief himself is bringing it up, the ger has already passed away, and now he's bringing it to Yerushalayim to discharge his obligation, but he passes away on the way up there. Hakesef yinatein levanav, the money is given to his children, to his yorshim, because he's no longer obligated to bring the money. The money is there to attain kapara. He doesn't need the kapara anymore because he passed away. There's no kapara achar mita, and that's the ultimate kapara mita, and so therefore he doesn't have to return the money anymore or give it to the kohenim. It can go to his children. V'asham, with regards to the asham, yireh adji stev, then the asham is led out to graze until it gets a muminit. V'macher v'plu damav l'ndama, and then it is sold, and the proceeds will be used for korbanot olah to be placed on the mizbeach at the times that the mikdash is quiet. So they keep the mizbeach going by putting olot. That's what this money will be used for. We'll see that that's actually halacha l'moshe misinai, that with regards to an asham shemetu baleha, an asham whose owner passed away, this is what you do with that asham. Natana kesef la'anshe mishmar umet. If he gives, or he has already given the money to the anshe mishmar, and passes away before his asham is brought, then we say, en yorshim yocholim notzi miyadam. Yorshim cannot take it away from the kohanim, shenemar, v'ish asher yiten la'kohen, lo yiyah. That same pasuk that we quoted before at the beginning of today's daf, ish et kodeshav lo yiyu, that is the latter half of that pasuk, which is ish asher yiten la'kohen, lo yiyah. Once it's given to the kohanim, it belongs to them, and you have no rights of retrieval at that point in time. And the reason being, because, as we're going to see later in the Gemara, that the giving of the kesef to the kohanim is a partial kapara. And since he gave it before he passed away, that kapara is attained, or that partial kapara is attained, and therefore the money is not disgorged from the kohanim back to the children, because the intent of the money being given is for that kapara. And it's not a mistake, quote-unquote, that it's given, even though he has yet to bring the asham. Natana kesef liho yariv, the asham lidaya. Now these are two of the mishmarot that are mentioned in Divrei Yamim of the 24 mishmarot of the Kohanim. It happens to be the first and second, and so the Mishnah is just using them as an example, that the first mishmar that's there is Yeho Yariv, and the second one is Yedaya. So now, if he gave the monies to Yeho Yariv, and then he gave the Asham to Yedaya, which is the order then of the mishmarot, he did it in the order, he gave the money to the first mishmar, and then brought the Asham afterwards, Yetza, then it works, because returning the money is a prerequisite for bringing the Asham. So here, when he brought the money to the earlier mishmar and the asham to the later mishmar, that's fine. Asham loho yariv v'kesef lidaya. If he does it the other way around, where he gives the asham to yaho yariv and then he gives the money to yidaya, then he's not yotzei because the monies came after the asham. Im kayam ha'asham. If the asham is still around, then yakrivu bnei yidaya. Then the second mishmar should be makrivit, because then the money and the asham will come in the same mishmar and it'll be fine. And as Rashi notes over here, if the asham is still around and we figure this out, we penalize Yeho Yariv and tell him to give it to Yedaya, because they were improperly accepting the asham to bring it now when he had yet to make the repayment of the Gezel Hager. V'im lo, if that's not the case, meaning the asham was already brought by Yeho Yariv, Yachzir ve'yavi asham acher, he has to come back and bring an additional asham. She'mevi gzelo, actually vi ashamo, person who brings his payment of money before he brings the asham, yatsa. Hevi ashamo, actually vi gzelo. On the other hand, if he brings the asham prior to bringing the monies, lo yatsa, you're not yotzei, and therefore over here, he would be forced to bring an additional asham. Natanet ha'keren, velo natanet ha'chomesh, en ha'chomesh me'akev. He gives the principal amount, but he does not give the chomesh. The chomesh itself is not me'akev. We're going to see that not only is it not me'akev now, even if he never pays it, it's not the me'akev. It's not me'akev the kapara. In order to attain a proper, or to do it the chatkila, he needs to give a chomesh. But here, if he brings the keren and gives it to the first mishmar, and then the sham to the second mishmar, he can bring the chomesh anytime he wants. Or if he doesn't even bring it at all, he still will attain kapara in that case. Now the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan. So the Gemara here is dealing with a pasuk that is found in, again, Parshat Nasol, with regards to Gezel Ager. And over there it says, in the ish goel lashiva asham elav, if he doesn't have a redeemer to return to, hasham amushav lashem lakoin, milvad ela kipurim asher yichaper bo alav. So the Gemara here wants to understand the different terminologies that are used in this pasuk, as well as the previous pasuk, where we see that the term asham is used. So usually the word asham means a korban asham. Yet over here it seems that the word asham is being used as a synonym for the keren, for the principal amount that he has to give. And that's what the Gemara is doing here in these brayot. It's trying to discover, understand what the meaning of the words are in these psukim. Tarabanan, asham ze keren. The asham means the principal amount. Hamushav, that is returned. Ze chomesh, that refers to the chomesh. O enu ela asham ze ayo. Maybe the asham means the actual korban. Well, my nafkamina. Then what's the nafkamina if you call the keren an asham? Or you say that the asham means the ayo. In either case, he's going to have to return the keren and he has to bring a korban asham. Afuke mi de rova. To deny this limud of rova. Dama rova. Gezel ager. Shechziro balayla. if you steal from a ger and now you're returning it to the Kohanim because the ger has passed away and you bring it at night, lo yatza, herziro chatzain, if you give it in pieces, you don't give the full principal amount, but you give it in piecemeal, lo yatza, my taima, asham kariyei rachmana, because the Torah calls it an asham. Since it's compared to a korban asham, just like a korban can only be brought during the day, so too the payment for gezel ger should only be brought during the day. And just like an asham has to come as a whole animal, is shalem and not a balmum, so too you can't split the karen into pieces because that's the equivalent of a balmum. And it will not discharge your obligation with regards to returning the gezel ger. Kishehu omer in the pasuk when it says, mivad ela kipurim, besides the fact that you have to bring this ela kipurim, the isle of kapara, which is the korban asham, Havi Omer, asham zekeren. Then it makes it clear in the pasuk that the word asham early in the pasuk is referring to the principal amount and not to the korban asham. So therefore that would be supportive of Rava's understanding that the word asham is used here to refer to the principal and has enough gemina that we treat the principal like a korban. Tani idach, we have another breita. Asham zekeren. Hamushav zechomesh. The same way that we learned in the previous breita. Oeina ela asham zechomesh. Maybe the asham refers to the chomesh. The mainaf gemina. Why does it make a difference if you call the chomesh or the keren the asham? Afuke me matnitan. That would come to deny the limud of our Mishnah. Tatna natano et a keren velo natano et a chomesh. If he gave the individual the principal amount and not the chomesh, ain't a chomesh me'akev. The chomesh is not me'akev the kapara. Adarabba, it'd be just the opposite. Chomesh me'akev. The chomesh is me'akev because it's called the asham. So whatever is called the asham clearly is me'akev the kapara, because in order to attain kapara, you have to bring the asham. So now, if the asham refers to the principal amount, we understand that's like our Mishnah. If you say the word asham refers to the chomesh, then the chomesh also would be me'akev the kapara. So who shu'o mer? So in the previous pasuk there where it says, v'idvadu et chatatam asher asu, v'yishiv et ashamo birosho, v'chamishito yosef alav v'natan asher asham lo, you see there that the word Ashamo, birosho, ashamo is referring to the principal amount, because rosh, or the head, is the main amount, or the principal amount. So you see, asham zekeren. From there you see that the asham is the keren, and our Mishnah's limud is correct, that the chomesh is not makev the kapara, because the asham references to the principal amount. Tani idach, have another breita. Asham zekeren, hamushav zechomesh. Gezel ger katub medaber, oin ola mushav, or maybe we should read it this way. We're talking about a case, the mushav is the kefel. That which you have to return is not the chomesh, but the kefel. Ubegneva tagdera katud v'mer. Maybe we're still talking about a case of gneva, not gzela. So by a case of gneva, you're chayav kefel. By a case of gzela, you would be chayav a chomesh if you admitted to swearing falsely under oath denying that claim. So how do I know that the mushav, which means I'm returning more than the principal amount, how do I know what that more is? Is that more a chomesh? Or is that more kefel? Tosfot over here questions the underlying assumption of the braita and says, well, we know, anytime there's an admission, then there's no kefel, because mode beknas is patur. And the only way to be chayav in a case of gezel ager is in a case where he took a shvu'ah falsely denying the claim, and then he is incriminated by his admission. That's the only time you're going to bring a keren chomesh asham, or here possibly a keren kefel and an asham. So then what's the havamina here that it's kefel, because if he admits, then there's no kefel here. So the good Runchenberg points you to the Shita Mekubetzet, who brings from the Rosh. The Rosh quotes this from his Rebbe, the Rami Rutenberg, the possibility that it's a case where Edim showed up and incriminate him with regards to the Gneva, and that's why he's chayev kefel. Then he admits to lying under oath. That then obligates him in a Karen and a Chomesh and an Asham. Now, we said earlier in the Masech, though, that chomesh is subsumed in the kefel. But that's going to be learned from what we're going to discuss right now, that it's chomesh and not kefel, and therefore it is subsumed under the kefel amount. But that's how they come up with the case that would be plausible based on the havamino of the bright over here. And therefore, the Gemara now concludes, Kushu omer ve'yishivet ha'shamo b'rosho v'chamishito areba mamon, ha'mishtalem b'rosh akatuv midaber. The bright says, wait a minute, if you go back to that previous pasuk, it says that the money here is v'shevet ashamo birosho v'chamishito yosef alav. Ashamo birosho is the principal amount, the original amount, in a sense. And therefore we're talking about here just the principal amount, and not beyond that, or not kefil in this case. Now the Gemara says gufa. The problem with the word gufa over here is usually that when we've discussed usually a Tanaic work in the Gemara, and now the Gemara wants to plumb that issue in a deeper way. It brought it as a sidebar, it brought it as a proof, and now wants to discuss it in more detail than it uses the word gufa. It does it sometimes with regards to a statement of an amora or something that we brought in the previous sugya as a sidebar, as a proof, and now wants to discuss it more. Over here, the term gufa is not used in that manner, because over here, amarova, we bring another statement of rava that is nothing to do with what we had brought before. So if you look in the Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he notes that this is not the only time this phenomenon takes place, and he says that afu pish lo chidesh davar kamar gufa shum debayim meimar achrite, that sometimes the Gemara uses gufa to say that this is a continuation thematically of that which we said before, or along the lines of what we said before. And since we quoted Rava before, we're quoting Rava again, because Rava's din here is very parallel to what we brought in the previous sugya as a sidebar. And that is, v'amar Rava, gezel ager, shechziro balayla, lo yatsa, shechziro chatzein, lo yatsa, maitayma asham kariyei rachmano. So this is an exact quote from what we brought before. And that would be fine if now the Gemara would plumb the depths or go into more detail about this, but it doesn't do that. It just moves on to another statement of Rava, but as the Rabbi Akiva Eiger points out, that's why it said Gufa, because it says this idea that the payment of Gezel Ager to the Kohanim is treated like a Korban is also apparent in this other statement of Rava, which is Amar Rava, Gezel Ager she'ein shaveh pruta l'kol kohen v'kohen lo yatsa yidei chavato, that an individual pays the money back to the Gezel Ager if he brings it to the Mikdash, and the money that he owes the ger, the principal and the chomesh, the 25% in excess of that, if that money doesn't result in one pruta going to each of the kohanim, then he's not yotzei his chovah to return the money or gain kapara, my taima, because it says asham hamushav. It says the asham that is returned, ajei ashava l'kol kohen v'kohen, until there's a return for every kohen who's a participant in that mishmar, because when he returns it, it's given to the whole mishmar. Every Kohen must receive a Hashava, and the minimum amount for Hashava is a Pruta. And therefore, Rashi says over here, if he doesn't have sufficient funds, he's going to have to add on Mishalo. He's going to have to add on from his own personal money in order to get to the amount that would give sufficient for a Pruta for each Kohen. Or you could argue that he can't attain Kapara because he doesn't have that sufficient funds. And even if he had his own money, that would not be a return that results in Hashava of the Gezel HaGer. By Rava. Rava now queries, based on that assumption that you have to have a Pruta for each coin in the Mishmar, what happens if Ein Bo Mishmeret Yeho Yariv, he didn't have sufficient funds to give it to each member of Yeho Yariv, the first Mishmar, V'yesh Bo Mishmeret Yedaya. On the other hand, it has sufficient funds for Yedaya. As Rashi notes over here, Yeho Yariv was a much bigger Mishmar than Yedaya, and therefore he wants to know if the funds are not sufficient for Yeho Yariv, but they are sufficient in Yedaya to get each Kohen a Pruta, Mau, what is the din? Hey, Chidami, the Gemara wants to know, what exactly is the case? If he gave it to the Mishmar Yedaya, B'Mishmeret Yedaya, then Ha'id Bey. What's the question here? He gave it to that Mishmar. There's sufficient funds for that Mishmar. Is Yotze. Lo Tzricha must be the case, Diave Yedaya, B'Mishmarto Deho Yariv. He gave it to the Mishmar of Yedaya, but it was during the week that belonged to Yo Yariv. My, what's the din? Mi aminan kevin delav mishmar tohu velo klumo. Since it isn't their week to be the Mishmar, what he gave is meaningless. O Dilma kevin delo chazile mi ikara lididaya koi. Or do we say, since originally, had he given it to Yo Yariv, it would not have sufficed. And therefore, there's no reason for him to give it during that period of time. By definition, it belongs to the Yedaya, because that's the only time it's going to work for him to give the money and result in all the Kohanim ending up with a Pruta. And therefore it says, if it belonged to Yedaya from the beginning. Teiku, the Gemara leaves this as unresolved. Okay, Bayi Rova. Rova asks another question along these lines. Kohanim, mashi chalku gezel ager keneged gezel ager. Are they allowed to divide up the monies of gezel ager between them in a manner of what's called trading, we'd call it? Because when it comes to korbanot or regular kodashim, there is no trading off. You can't say, you take that korban, I'll take this korban. Everybody has to get a piece of each korban. There is no bartering between the korbanot. So the question is, about this gezel ager, what is its status once the money reaches the hands of the kohanim? Is it the equivalent of a korban, like an asham? Or is it now chulin, meaning it's the monies of the kohanim, and they can do what they want with it as they please with it? Mi amrinan asham kariyei rachmano, that the Torah calls it an asham, like we saw from Rava before. Ma asham in chukim Hashem keneged Hashem. And like we discussed just now, you're not allowed to divide up korbanot or barter them one for the other. You take that Hashem, we'll take this Hashem. No, each person's got to get from each of those Hashemot. Af gezel ager in chukim, gezel ager keneged gezel ager. Maybe the same thing is true. If you have two people bringing up payments for gezel ager, you can't say you take that money, we'll take this money. Each one of the pots of money has to be divided amongst the kohanim. Odoma gezel ager mamonahu. Maybe gezel ager, once it's given to the kohanim and attained the kapara, it becomes chulin in the hands of the kohanim, and therefore it could be bartered or traded off between them. Hadar pashto. Afterwards, he resolved the issue and says asham kariyeh rachmana. The Torah called it an asham. And Rav Acha b'rei de Rova matni la behedja. Rav Acha, the son of Rova, had him say this explicitly, not as a question and then come to a conclusion, but rather as a statement. Amar Rova kohanim ein chukim gezel ager keneged gezel ager maitaima asham kariyeh rachmana, because it's called an asham. So by Rova kohanim begezel ager yoshim avu o mikablei matanot avu. When it comes to the receipt of the monies from the ger, what is the status of the kohanim? Are they basically standing in as the inheritors of the ger? Since he doesn't have any inheritors or direct descendants that would inherit him, the kohanim basically function as the public inheritors for the ger. Or do we say, mekablei matanot avu, that it's really a kodesh baruch hu's who the money has been giving to, and then Hashem gives it to the kohanim, or mishulchan gavoa kazachu, that the kohanim are entitled to it because it was given to Hashem, and they get it basically as a gift from Hashem. L'may nafkemino, why should that make a difference? Kagon, shegazal chametz. If a person stole chametz, ve'avar alav ha-pesach, and Pesach pays by, i'amart yoshim avu, if they are direct inheritors of the ger, I mean, they step in as the public inheritors of the ger, haynu haydi arte morit. Whatever they inherit, that's what they get. So therefore, in this case, had the ger been alive, the person could have returned the chametz to him and said, Hare shalcha lefanecha, here's your chametz back. That's you what you're... it's asur now, but here it is, it's intact, I'm giving you back what it was. It's not worth anything now? That's too bad, we can say Hare shalcha lefanecha. If that's true about the ger himself, then that would also be true with regards to his yoshim. He can hand it to them and say, Hare shalcha lefanecha. V'yamar t'mikablei matanot avu. If you, on the other hand, say that they are recipients of the gifts, matanam kamar rachmana the native, the who, you have to give them something of value to be a matana, in order that when they get it from Hashem, it's a matana of value. The afrobaamu. If it's a matana that is demanded here, then they're not giving him anything. He's handing him a bunch of dust. He's handing him an isur hana'av chameit. If you're giving them chameit, shabal av pesach, it's worthless. That's not deemed to be a matana. Now, the Balei Tosafot over here asks, why doesn't Rova just answer this question from the previous two sugyot that we had, where he said it's clear that the status of gezel ager is that of an asham, or like an asham? And just like by kodshei kodashim, make shulchan gavoa kazachu, the same would be true over here. So why is Rova querying about something that seemingly he's answered before? You could argue that has to do with when this happened. Maybe this question preceded his conclusions from the previous two gemarot. Or you could argue, like Tosfot says over here, Nirad the Chad Minhon Garsin and Rabba, that one of them was authored, or one of these questions is authored by Rabba, not Rova, and then you don't have that problem. The Rosh, on the other hand, quotes from his Rebbe, the Maram Rebutenberg, the question could still stand, because even if you believe that the Yorshim, you might still demand that there be Hashava, and Hashava, the minimum necessity for Hashava is a Pruta, and maybe you would demand real value be given to the Kohanim, even though they are considered to be yorshim, in order to accomplish hashava. Because if you return less than a pruta to someone, that's not considered hashava. And here where the kohanim are dispersed and broken up into individual yorshim, maybe you need a pruta to get to each one, even if they're deemed to be yorshim and it's not a matana. Even though that doesn't totally answer the question, because that would all lean towards the side of yorshim, you would formulate the question slightly differently in that case. Nevertheless, he does give the possibility that it should be that the question is not automatically resolved by the fact that you call it an asham. Rav Zira Bayihochi. Rav Zira asked the question in the following manner. Afilu imtim salom ar mikablei matanot avu. Even if you think that they are receiving gifts from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, mishulchan gavoka zachu, halo ibayilan. That wouldn't be a question. Dehai matana marachmana nenetiv lo. Because the Torah said give whatever was going to the ger would go to them. I mean that the Torah doesn't demand there be a specific matana to them, but rather whatever was going to the ger gets given to them. So in that sense, there's no question whether they are yorshim or they're recipients of the matana, then whatever you give to the ger is what they get. The Torah doesn't say give them something special. It says give whatever you were going to give to the ger to them. And so therefore, in either case, there's no question that the chametz would suffice. But, ela ki kamai bailon, this is the question. Kagon shenaflu lo eser behemot begezel ager. If one of the goanim ends up with 10 behemot from gezel ager, michayvi lafrushe minayu maser lo, do they have to take off maser behema from it? Because it depends on how you view Yerusha in these situations. Meaning, the Gemara here now explains, because if you have Yorshim Havu, if they're deemed to be Yorshim, V'amar Mar Kanu B'Tfisat Abayit Chayavim, that when the Yitomim, the orphans, come in and take over the estate of their father, as long as the estate remains intact and is not divided up amongst them, then they basically function in place of their father. And just like their father would be Chayav in Maser Behema, so too they would be Chayav in Maser Behema, because they are considered to be a single entity, or there's been no transference of ownership in that case. So do we say the same thing over here, that these individuals, the Kohanim, are Yorshim of the Gezel Ager, and since the Gezel Ager now remains, we'll call it intact as an estate, even though now it's being given to the Kohanim, it's not Chayav in Maser Behema? Oh, Dilma Mikablei Matanot Avu, or do we view it as a gift? It's not, because that has an afkamina. Halokeach Vanitan Lo Matana Patur Mi Maser Behema. When it comes to Maiser Behema, if you purchase the animals, or you are gifted the animals, you're not chayav in Maiser Behema. For that generation, at least, you're not chayav in Maiser Behema if you buy or are gifted 10 animals. My, what is the din? Meaning that do we consider the Gezel Ager to be a matana, and therefore there would be no obligation of Maiser Behema, or do we consider it to be a Yerusha, which would then result in them chayav in Maiser Behema, because just like the Yitomim from the estate, as a whole, they would have to take out Maiser Behema because it's not considered to be a transference of ownership. So to over here, it would not be deemed a transference of ownership. So Gemara tries to prove that from the Matnot Kuna, which is Tashma. 24 Matnot Kuna nitnu l'Aron u'l'Banav. There are 24 gifts that are granted to the Kohanim, most of which are enumerated in Parshat Korach, after they rebel and question the authenticity of Aaron as the Kohen. Afterwards, the Torah lays out all the gifts that belong to the Kohanim. And if you go to Parshat Korach, you will see there that the Psukim begin. So there is a general statement that you get all the Kodashim. Then it specifies, and it goes through all the different things that the Kohanim are entitled to. And then a number of psukim later, it closes like this. Kol trumot ha-kodashim, asher yarimu b'nei Yisrael la-Hashem, netati lecha ulevanecha v'livnotecha itecha lecha kulam. Again, a summary pasuk that all of that belongs to you. Brit melach olam hi, it is a covenant of salt with you, lifnei Hashem, lecha lezaracha itach, with you and your offspring. So you have a klal, which says these are the general things that belong to the Kohen, a closing klal, and a prat in between. So that's a klal uprat uklal, and it closes, as we said here, with the brit melach, with the covenant of salt. And what the Gemara says here is, anybody, alkola mekayman, anybody who does what they're supposed to and gifts the Kohanim, these 24, or any of the 24 matanot, then they have been mekayim, the klal uprat, and the brit melach. The way Rashi words it over here, Kola Torah kula shenitna lidrosh b'klal uprat uchlal. It is as if he kept the whole Torah, which is subject to the rules or algorithms of Rabbi Ishmael Omer, and one of those is klal uprat uchlal. And therefore, it's as if he's mekayim all of the Torah, or Rashi, or keilu kiyem kol korbanot shenitna behem brit melach, or it's like he kept all the korbanot, which all have a requirement of salt being placed on them, or have a covenant of salt. So even keeping one of the gifts has the effect of keeping all of them, or being mikayim, the kol ha-Torah kula. So we see this as being something very significant in gifting of the Kohanim. And the opposite is true, kol ha-aver aleihem, anybody who keeps them for themselves, kilu aver al klal uprat uchlal brit melach, as if he's violated the kol ha-Torah and all the korbanot. Ve'elu hein, and these are the korbanot. Eser b'migdash, there are 10 that are found in the migdash, which means that these are kodshei kodashim, items that must be consumed or eaten inside of the Azara. Dalet b'Yerushalayim, 4 that are specific to Yerushalayim, meaning that the boundaries of them are Yerushalayim. Ve'eser b'Gvulim, and 10 of them are outside of Yerushalayim in the Arei Yisrael, as Rashi says. Esa b'migdash, the 10 of the migdash are the following. Chatat behema, a chatat is manifest in many different ways. You know that, if you know the ezum koman that we say at the end of the korbanot every morning, here you can know most of the korbanot that are going to be mentioned here. The chatot behema comes as a chatat tzibur. There's a possibility of chatot that are brought by the tzibur, and those are the ones on the moadim, the musafim that we bring, as well as other specific chatot for the tzibur, and the chatot ha-yachid, as well as those chatot that are brought by the yachid. The chatat of, chatat of is brought by sometimes individuals where there is a korban olev yoreid. There are different levels of korbanot that can be brought. Sometimes the of is an alternative for them, or there are other times where chatat of is the primary korban that is brought. Vasham vadai. Hashem Vadai is, again, the listed in Ezum Mukoman, you have all the Hashemot that are enumerated there, which is an Hashem Gzelot, which we've been discussing in the Perek until now, Hashem Me'ilot, Hashem Shifuch Harufa, Hashem Nazir, and Hashem Mitzora. So some of those Hashemot are for Kapara. Other of them are to terminate or end your status as a Mitzora, status as a Nazir, whether they also have an aspect of Kapara, we've discussed in other Mesechtot. Hashem Talui, Hashem Talui is a Korban that is brought when someone is violated in a veirah that they would have had to bring a chatat for, but they are besafek about the violation, exactly what the parameters are discussed in the Gemarot in Kodoshim. V'zivchei shalmei tzibor, the shlamim of the tzibor, there's only one shlamim of the tzibor that are brought at all, and those are the shlamim that are brought on Shavuot. The log shemen shal mitzorah, the log shemen that's put on, they're sprinkled on the head of the mitzorah, whatever's left over belongs to the Kohanim. Motar ha-omer, the leftover of the Korban HaOmer belongs to the Kohanim, because the Omer is Kodshei Kodashim. And even though the Braita is going to mention Sharei Menachot, any leftover of a Mincha, the Minchat HaOmer is somewhat unique. It's brought from barley, it is a Korban HaTzibur, it also is brought from the fresh kernels, so they mentions it separately. Shtei Lechem are the two Lechem that are brought on Shavuot, along with the Kivsei Atzeret. The Lechem Apanim, which are the showbreads that are put on the Shulchan from week to week, that are eaten by each Mishmar as they expire weekly. V'sheyarei Menachot, and the leftovers of the Menachot, which are Kodshei Kodoshim, those remnants, which not put on the Mizbeach, the Kometz that goes on the Mizbeach, the remainder goes to the Kohanim, except if it is a mincha of a kohen. V'arba b'Yerushalayim, four in Yerushalayim are bechora. Bechora here, we're talking about a bechor tam, which goes on the mizbeach, belongs to the kohen in Yerushalayim. Bechor mambom, on the other hand, would be given to the kohen, even in the gvulin, and becomes chulin to him there. V'abikurim, the bikurim, which this week's parasha kitavo, that are brought up to Yerushalayim and put on the mizbeach, and then left for the kohanim. V'hamuram minatodah v'el nazir, again, from the Mishnayot and Ezum Mekoman, those things that are separated away from the Todah and the El Nazir, which are very similar korbanot, they're actually modified shlamim, and therefore Rashi claims that's why shlamim are not mentioned here. It's a little strange since shlamim are really the primary korban, and these are derivatives of shlamim, but it mentions them separately, that which is taken from the Todah. From the Todah is taken the chazeh and the shok, plus four chalot, one from each different type of the 40 chalot that are brought. Then you bring four out of those 40 are given to the Kohanim. And by the El Nazir, you get not only the Chazen, the Shok, but you get the Zroa B'Shela, and you get the Chalan Rakik for the 20 Chalot that are brought. You get one from each, so you get also get a Chalan and Rakik along with that. And again, Rashi says that Shlamim is subsumed under these, and that Todah and El Nazir are counted as one because they're so similar in nature that they have breads and they're like a Shlamim. They're considered to be one item. Those items which are gifted to the Kohanim from these Kodshim Kalim, they are treated by the Kohanim as things that they can eat in Yerushalayim, as opposed to the other, or the remainder of the Korban that goes to the Balim and can be eaten in Yerushalayim. Ve'orot Kodoshim, over here we speak about the Orot Kodoshei Kodshim. When it comes to Kodshim Kalim, it all belongs to the Balim. The Kohanim do not get the Orot, the skins. But when it comes to Kodshei Kodoshim, they're entitled to the skins. As Rashi notes over here, it's mentioned amongst those things in Yerushalayim is because it's not bounded by the Azara. The Orot can be taken wherever the Kohanim want, and therefore it's not limited to the Azara, even though it's limited to Kodshei Kodashim. And the reason it mentions them in Yerushalayim is because they're only going to end up with them in Yerushalayim, because it's talking about Korbanot that are brought up to the Mikdash. So they're not going to end up with these Orot anywhere else, and therefore it's categorized under those items that are in Yerushalayim. Vasara b'gvulin, and there are 10 in the Gvulin, Truma, Trumat Maaser, Chala, Reshita Geis, the first shearings, Vamatanot, which is the Zroa Lechaim and the Kebab from Chulin animals that are Shechta that go to the Kohen. Pijona Ben, the redemption of the firstborn. Pijon Peter Chamor, the redemption of a Chamor, the firstborn Chamor. Stei Achuza, a case where someone is Makdish, their inherited property and given to the Mikdash, and he does not redeem it before the Gizbar either sells it or the Yovel hits. In that instance, the property then will return to the Kohanim, whoever is the Mishmar at the time of the Yovel, and they will keep it. Ustei Charamim, which is someone who is Machrim, his Makdish, his Sadeh, the Kohanim. Assuming here that Stam Charamim are the Kohanim. Begezel Ager is the last of these that is mentioned here, the 10th one of the Gibulin, and the Karkari Mihat Matana. And you see here that's one of the 24 Matanot Kihuna. So you see that Gezel Gager is called a Matana. Shmamina Mekablei Matanot Avu Shmamina. That they're deemed to be a recipient of a Matana. If they're a recipient of a Matana, according to Rabbi Zeiri, that means that they're not Chayav in Maiser Be'ema. According to the original question of Rava, that might demand that you have to give a Pruta to each Kohen, or sufficient has to be given to each Kohen to consider a Matana. Natana de Kesef Lanshe Mishmar. Amar Abaye, Shmamina Kesef Mechaper Mechta. That Kesef atones at least in portion. Dilo Mechaper, if it wasn't Mechaper, Aviamina Mechader the Yoshim. Then why doesn't the money go back to the Yoshim? If you think about it in the Mishnah said that if he gives the money before he brings the Hasham and then passes away the Gazlan, that we don't allow the Yoshim to come and take the money back. What Abaye proves from that is that it must be that it attains some kapara, otherwise there's no reason to leave the money with the Kohanim. Because, my taima, he wouldn't give the money with the intent that he's going to die. That would not be the intention of his gifting of the money. The only reason he would give the money is because he would attain a kapara, and therefore he wants the money to be given to Kohanim, even if he's going to pass away. Elamiato, if that's the case, chatat shemetu balea tipok tochulin. Someone who set aside a kurban chatat and then passes away, maybe the korban chatat should automatically go to chulin. Because when he separated out the chatat, he didn't intend for it after he passed away where it's useless, so therefore it should automatically unwind his hekdesh. So amre chatat shemetu balea hilchata gemira lo. No, that's Allah Moshe Misinai, that a chatat whose owner passes away, delamita azla, is put to death or let to starve to death. Elamiato. So what about our case? Asham shemetu balea lipok tochulin. Why do we say in our Mishnah that the Asham, when the Balim pass away, he has to go out to graze and get a mum and sold and used for it in the Dava, in the Mikdash, should automatically go out to Chulin, again, he didn't separate out this Asham for the case where he's going to pass away, where he doesn't need it. So Asham Nami Yochata Gemirala. That's also a law. Moshe Misinai, Koshe B'chatat Meita B'Asham Roeh. Anything that has a rule that by a Chatat dies, by an Asham goes out to graze and get a mum. So that's the case here. Chatat shemetu balea is the mita. The Hasham goes out to graze and waits for a mom. Once it has a mom, it's sold and the proceeds used for nidava in the mikdash. Elamiata. Yivama shenafla lifnei muka shchin. Tipik below chalitza. A yivama who married an individual. And now her husband passed away. And now she's left in front of this disgusting individual who she doesn't want to marry. She should be able to be released from this without any chalitza, because she never intended to marry the first husband, with the resultant outcome that she would have to marry this yavam, and therefore it should automatically dissolve the kiddushin. She had no intent to be mekadesh herself for this type of outcome. Now, as Tosfot points out over here, first of all, this has to be a case of erusin and not nisuin, because clearly if she consummated the marriage, she wants the kiddushin with her first husband to take effect, because otherwise she'd be living with him without any kiddushin. So it has to be a case where she only was engaged to the first husband and she falls as a yavama now after the first husband passes away. Because in that case, she could argue, I really didn't want to marry to end up in this predicament. Mar says, Hatam anan sadeh, deminach nechala b'chodu. Now we know in that case that she does not consider that a high enough probability or a risk that she would give up her kiddushin. Kidder Reish Lakish, like Reish Lakish we saw in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is the Amar Reish Lakish, Tav the Meitav Tandu Milim Tav Armalo, that it's better to live as a pair or as a company than by yourself. Meaning that a woman has a certain impetus to get married, and she will marry even if the circumstances are not perfect, because being married is so much better than being alone. Especially in their day, in their society, a woman who was not married was very vulnerable and there was no one to take care of her. So the woman would take the preference of marriage even if the situation or circumstances aren't exactly what she imagined. Now, again, she would not necessarily agree to marry a mukashchin, but she will marry the first husband fully without any reservations because she knows there's a risk that she might end up with this yevama. But that risk is not large enough to dissuade her from marrying the first person fully because that necessity or impetus to be married is so great that it overrides maybe even a rational decision by her to say that, wait, maybe there's that possibility that I could end up with this guy and I don't want him at all. And therefore, we do not say that Adaita Dahochi, that she had in mind to dissolve the Kiddushin if this was the outcome. Tosfot says, well, based on this, why don't we say that this is the case anytime you enter into a transaction between two parties? The buyer buys something and it breaks. And he says, Lo Adaita Dahochi, I didn't intend for this to be the outcome. I didn't intend to buy it so that it breaks, and he should be able to dissolve the transaction. That's what the Gemara is suggesting over here. So Tosfot says there's a difference. In all the transactions that we're speaking about here, there's only one party to the transaction. There's either the Makdish, who is trying to be Makdish's animal, or we're talking about a woman who is accepting Kiddushin. In both those cases, they are the sole decider with regards to the outcome of the situation. In that case, you can talk about a daita dahachi, a lo daita dahachi, whether they intended or didn't intend for this outcome. Now then, when you're dealing with a buyer and a seller, you have two parties here. The buyer might not have intended for this outcome, but the seller clearly did. The seller says, if it breaks, it's too bad. That was your problem. It's your bad mazel. I sold it no matter what. And so in that case, we can't make a claim that a daita dahachi, I didn't buy it because the seller did sell it for that intent. And therefore, it does not dissolve the transaction because you can't have one party in a transaction that involves two parties deny the transaction or dissolve the transaction. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Kufyud Aleph, Amud Aleph.